What's up, everybody? Paul Hickey here with nooffseason.com. Got my man. You probably recognize him. Duke Denny One Time Dodson of Graybos.
I still laugh when people call me that, like, for real.
Okay. So this may be an ignorant question, but what does that even mean?
Can you explain it to us? Yeah, so it's a longer story, but it's probably worth it. So growing up, my dad was a State Farm agent, law-abiding citizen, but he had a bookie he would go to. And he would bet little NFL parlays. Uh-huh. So I'd go with him and I'd see him fill out the little betting slip. And his name is Dennis, but he wrote Big Al as his like name.
I was okay.
Like, hey, why you do that? And he said, well, just in case a bookie gets arrested, I don't want them coming to my office and arresting me or talking to me. So he had like a gambling nickname is the best way. Okay. So his friends as a joke would call him Big Al. And it was real funny. And so when I started like entering fantasy football leagues and like golf pools and all these things, same thing. These emails fly around to hundreds of people you don't know. And it's gambling, and so I had my nickname as Denny One Time as a gambling nickname because my name is Dennis, my real name is Dennis also, so friends okay. call me Denny, and so the one time is like it's a gambling term, it's a poker term, like maybe you're all in, you're like one time, like calling for a card, or you're rolling the dice one time, you know what I mean? So
yeah,
Denny One Time is my gambling name. It's now my sports card name.
Makes sense. I was hoping that was the story behind it, honestly. Yeah. But my favorite part is that my dad was a law-abiding citizen. But
most of the time. Most of the time, yeah.
That's great. All right, so Duke, for those of you who don't know, is the co-owner, one of the owners of Graybos Sports Cards in Richmond, Virginia. And they have become the number one partner of the Sports Card Strategy Show and nooffseason.com. And hopefully we'll continue to be that in the future. We are here in their podcast studio right now in Richmond, Virginia, underneath the amazing card shop. And I wanted to talk to Duke about several things. Sort of how to build a local card shop is kind of the theme of the show, but we're going to dive deep into that. Before we do, I'd like to get Duke from you, just the overview. Like what's the story behind Graybos? How did you guys get started?
My two partners, Graybo is my brother-in-law, and then Ryan Fitz grew up down the street from Gray and actually worked with me for about 7 years, and so I knew him. The three of us were on the weekends, we're always texting each other about golf, about NFL, daily fantasy, sports betting. It was almost like a weekly thing. We were always doing it. So when I started sniffing back into the card world a couple years ago and realizing the card business was becoming a thing, again, I started telling them about it, and then got them kind of on that scent as well. And so then it migrated to just not just talking about, you know, our daily fantasy picks, but actually what cards we're buying and selling. We started doing breaks together on whatnot. You know, we would jump in and be a Tuesday night, like, hey, let's do a break. We'd all jump in and do it together. We talk about what cards we hit. And so the three of us, as the idea emerged, three of us just started talking about it. Gray was teaching school and wanted to try something different. Fitz had a job. He kind of liked it, but he was ready to try something different. I sold a good chunk of my business last year, so I was kind of looking for something new, kind of a fresh start. And so we're like, hey, I wanted to be around the card business as much as I could through buying. You know, I started like you looking at buying and selling singles, right? And I was doing that. But I wanted more. I wanted more. I wanted to be immersed into the business. And so we started thinking about having a hobby shop, because to me as a kid, that was like my favorite part of the business, was going to my local card shop. And so we thought, hey, what if we can attack this thing a couple of ways? One is create really the best hobby shop experience in this area for kids, for adults, whoever wants to be in it. And at the same time, I can still do my investing. I can still do like the fund, as we call it, and all these other avenues, but they work well together because we're playing in traffic, playing in deal flow all the time, being in a card shop. Like I might be targeting a Trevor Lawrence and a customer might bring in and want to sell the shop a Trevor Lawrence. And that might be one I want to personally invest in as well. So I just wanted to be around it and thought this was the best way to do it.
Yeah. In that way, I am super envious of what you're doing, because I feel like that would be amazing to be fully immersed in it. And so I could definitely see that being kind of the main thing that's driving you. You guys just opened in February 2023. We're sitting here in June 2023. What have the last few months been like for you? What have some of the challenges?
I would say tons of fun and tons of work. I would say having a card shop probably has a lot of fun things about it, but it's certainly not maybe as sexy as it looks from the outside looking in, because it is a grind. I love the grind. I've never been afraid of work if it's something I care about. But I guess the two biggest things I probably didn't know going into it, number one is the difficulty getting new wax, right? Obviously, we've talked about that a lot. You can't just call a distributor and say, hey, give me this, this, and this. They say, well, buy our crap wax for 2 years. And once you buy enough of the crap wax, we'll give you the good wax as you work your way up and get allocation. And then second is just the if you don't run, it's a hard business to make a living. It's not like what I would do if I wanted to become a billionaire. This is not the business I would run. You can make a living, but it's a lot of work. But just today you saw in the shop, the amount of energy and work it takes to buy cards from people. You have to value, buy, negotiate, value, tag, list, get it on the shelf, get it on eBay, all that, get it in our inventory for the big cards. And it's a ton of work. And you might buy a card for $70 and sell it for $95. You've done all that work for $25, right? And so you have to do a lot of it. So it's a volume game. Unless you're dealing in ultra high end cards, you're buying a lot of cards for $1, $5, $10, $100, and you're some of them you sell in a day, some you sell in a month, some you sell in 4 months. So you have to pay the right price. You have to buy the right cards that people actually want, and then you have to effectively market, list them, sell them. And do that over and over and over again.
Yeah. How do you guys track all of that? Because I would think that would be a huge challenge. And what I mean specifically is, like, if you're coming from another industry or another business, I think a lot of times you know what you're paying for a particular item or service, and then you know when you're going to sell it and how much you're going to sell it for going in. And cards is like kind of unpredictable. Like, you can do that if you're hyper focused into one of the billions of lanes in sports cards, but because there are so many lanes, so many ways to go, so many different cards, sets, years, different kinds of collections, like, to me it would seem like you're just getting smacked in the face at all times with stuff that you didn't know or didn't anticipate. So how do you track all of that?
Yeah, so I think starting off, we made a bunch of mistakes in the buying, either buying the wrong card, paying too much, buying the new product when it's 7 days old and buying it on the brand new product prices. And then a month later you're paying, like, people are buying it for half the price you could have bought it a month ago. So we made some mistakes doing that right out of the gate. You gotta be careful buying, like, Mahomes during Super Bowl week, that kind of thing. Cause you gotta be careful buying Cam Thomas after his fourth 40-point game. You gotta buy him 4 months before that, or a month or two after that. You can't buy it during that week. You need to be selling. Okay.
We'll give you the pass, because I don't know if you started listening to the Sports Card Strategy Show early enough to know when to buy Cam Thomas. So that's okay. Yeah. That wasn't your fault.
Well, I will say this, like, you can still, as a card shop, you can still buy Cam Thomas if you're paying 70% of value, if you can turn around and flip it really quickly. But if it takes you 2 weeks to put it in the box, list it, tag it on the shelf, and then sell it, then 2 weeks might as well be 2 years. Yep. So back to your question though. So when it comes to singles, anything $100 and up, we actually inventory, meaning we put it in our point of sale system. So if you go and buy a $300 slab, we can type in, Patrick Mahomes, that card comes up, and then the system knows, our accounting system knows what we paid for, what we sold. So we have clear records there. But anything under 100, the juice ain't worth the squeezing as far as inventorying something that's cost $2, right? You would spend more money tracking it than you would actually selling it. Okay. So we pay, a certain price, usually 70% of value. Try to move it quickly. And then generally, category wise, we have categories like $5 raw, $10 raw, $20 raw, but I don't have every card inventory.
And your boxes are great, by the way. Like, that's one of my personal favorite things to do at a shop or a show, is to go to the kinds of boxes that you have right when you walk in the door at Graybo's. Like, you walk in the door, boom, right to your right, you've got $20 and under slabs, you've got $20 to $40 slabs, you've got $50 and up slabs, and then you've got it sorted by different sports, and you've got stuff in there that are raw, that are $40 to $60 raw cards, because they're legit cards. And I think, and then you have the dollar boxes.
Sure.
So back to what you were saying, it sounds like you don't spend really, I don't want to say any time, but you spend as minimal time possible tracking and sorting the lowest value cards, because it's going to be, you're going to lose on the amount of employee time spent doing that. And so you know that just moving through those cards is gonna is. Do you see it as a wash moving through that level of cards?
Most dollar cards will probably never actually make money. We might buy the dollar card for 50 cents and sell it for a dollar. We might sell quite a few of them in a year, but I wouldn't. But the labor it takes. Our primary buyer is Don, for example. Don needs it very efficiently, and he gets a stack of 100 cards. He has to go through it and say, we want these 30, we don't want these 70. Like, he has to go through really fast, right?
Yeah.
He has to then, of those 30 cards, some of them might be dollar cards. He has to just know they're dollar cards. Like, if he has to look up eBay value and it comes up a dollar, he needs to have already known that. He needs to save that 30 seconds to a minute. So, like, a $100 card, yes, you're going to go through, you're going to value, but you just got to know some cards are a dollar. And then you got to pay 50 cents for that dollar card. Really, we have the dollar boxes because people like them and kids like them and people that want to buy a dollar card and get it graded, like things like you and Chad do, those kind of things. That's why we have them, but because we want people coming into the store, but we probably don't make or lose much money on the dollar cards.
Okay. So then as you look at this is one thing I'm really curious about. So as you look at your business trying to make it profitable, What's your portfolio look like as a shop in terms of, you've got your display cases, obviously, you've got wax, you've got the value boxes and the dollar boxes that we talked about. Are there other categories that I'm, well, I know there's other categories, like there's breaking, you're breaking on drip.
Right.
How do you break, like, how do you break those down in your inventory?
Like, our chart of accounts, you'll see, like, for every sport, there's like, say, dollar baseball, $2 baseball, $5 baseball, 10, 20, 30, 40, 50. And then above 50, we used to just put in an inventory each individual card. Now we actually do it up to 100. And 100 or more, we inventory the actual card. Below that, it's just the general category. We look at our income stream as in-store. We have in-store raw, in-store graded, all singles, right? We have wax in-store. We have wax sold through breaks, and then we have eBay sales. When I started, I assumed it would be 50-50 in-store sales and 50% online sales. I think it's going to be closer to like 70 or 80% online when it's all said and done. We still do quite a bit in-store, but you can sell me. eBay is just a huge market. And, like, for example, somebody comes in here and sells us a Los Angeles Ram card, right? Cooper Cup, Matt Stafford. The chances of somebody in Richmond wanting that card is so much slimmer than the chances of someone in Los Angeles that wants that card, right? So just getting things on eBay quickly, we're selling so much on eBay. So we think, like, graded singles will probably be one of our bigger winners in our first year. Eventually, wax will be a huge winner, I think, but it's going to take a lot of time because of the price we have to pay for good wax. Our margins are still pretty thin, and then we're just starting breaking on drip, and so we're not great at it yet as far as we're not great at turning a profit at it yet. So, you know, I kind of order of operations where step one is get enough inventory to get us open. Step two is learn how to buy and sell singles effectively in the store. Third is how to sell on eBay effectively. And then now fourth, we're really trying to conquer this wax thing and breaking. So eventually, I think we thought the idea of breaking is, if I can buy it and break it online, and even if I just break even, I'm still moving wax through the system, which kind of moves me up the hierarchy with the distributor, which eventually kind of gets me a better allocation. That's kind of the idea. So it was like, if I could buy it for a dollar and sell it for a dollar, I'll do as much of that as I can to get up that ladder fast enough. But what's interesting with going on with Fanatics is, no one's quite clear on this, but everyone thinks that Fanatics will basically cut out some of the distributors, if not all of them, eventually. And so all that work we're doing, buying all this wax from our distributors, may not matter as much.
Yeah.
But what we think is that we're still proving to Fanatics that we can move wax, and they're going to eventually, when they come calling, I can show them, hey, instead of buying $5,000 of wax a month, I'm buying $100,000 of wax a month.
Yeah.
And I'll matter more to them eventually when that matters. So that we like our distributors, and we're trying to have a good relationship with them. But by the time we matter to them, they might not matter.
Yeah.
To us.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And in the meantime, you got to try to focus on the things that are going to build your community, right?
Correct.
Anyway, so that kind of goes with making sure that you have products for them and all of that. So what would you say out of all these, and by the way, your philosophy is very similar to, like, what Lefty and I talk about with our own individual philosophies of, like, how we're running our own eBay stores and, like, our own individual card flipping businesses where mm-hmm. it's sort of about, and not everybody thinks this way, but Lefty and I both are alike in the thought process that you have with running Graybo's, where it's like, it's about being able to have inventory and move through it so that you get the reps, you get the experience of what works and what doesn't work. And then in the meantime, you're building a customer base. You know, if Correct. You're just sitting, I think there's a lot of people that just sit on a card and they want to be successful making money flipping sports cards, but they're never going to sell the card until it gets them a certain amount of money.
Right.
And are they, you know, is there opportunity cost in that kind of a thing?
Yeah. And I can see argument both sides. If I had a full-time job and card flipping was just a part-time hobby and I only had 20, 30, 40 cards I'm trying to sell, I probably would be as patient as possible and wait till I got top dollar. But what you're saying is absolutely correct. And I don't know exactly how the eBay algorithm works, but I do know the more transaction you do, the more positive reviews you get, the more volume you do, you're going to pop up and you're going to be higher in search results. And we have definitely seen that change in just 4 months. Like, we went from crickets on eBay to removing cards in an afternoon sometimes. And yeah. that didn't happen 4 months ago.
Yeah, that's awesome. Okay, so before we get to Drip and your podcast, I want to ask about a couple more questions on the shop. So what's like the biggest piece of advice you would give? We had some young gentlemen in the shop earlier today where we talked about how to value a sports card, kind of how to treat, you know, how to treat it a little bit more like a business. What if they came to you and said, like, I want to open up a card shop one day, what would be your biggest piece of advice, or to anybody out there listening?
For advice one, I would think about it. There's probably, in my opinion, two main ways to look at it. One is stay really small, have really low overhead, and cut every cost you can out, do most things yourself, and just know that you'll still have to work pretty hard and maybe eke out a living, but do the math before you jump in. That's your only ways of making a living. It's hard. It's not the easiest thing to do. And then second way is what we're doing is probably trying to scale and go bigger. And we have way more overhead than any other shop in the Mid-Atlantic, I guarantee you, because we're trying to build something, you know, we're trying to build something. And we'll get into Drip in the podcast in a second, how that kind of fits into the puzzle. But I would say don't do anything for less, but definitely don't start a business unless you really love it and you're passionate about it. Because as you're in a business, I'm sure you see this, like, you work your butt off. Like, you work, like, you would never work this hard for someone else. you just wouldn't. Like, it would feel like you were bound to them, and like you would just feel like a servant almost, because you work so hard for your own business. I mean, I work sun up, sun down. I'm always thinking about it. I'm always worrying about it. And I was not very employable as an employee. I worked for someone else for about 3 or 4 years, and I worked hard. That's fine, but that has a really short shelf life, in my opinion. But when you're working for yourself, you have almost limitless energy, because you're so worried about it failing that you don't even, you look up and you've worked for 10 hours and it felt like two.
Yeah. Today flew by and it was
grinded. I watched you grind it all day long. I watched you. Yeah.
Thanks, man. You too. And you're working with your friends, which is awesome. So talk about real quick working with your friends and paying your friend. I mean, like, as much detail as you could give, I'm not asking you to tell us like what Fitz makes and what you're making on stuff, but just a little bit behind the curtain of, like, for the people out there that wonder, when you say this isn't the business to go into to get rich, and you're talking about open up a card shop, but at the same time, you've got, I was talking to Gray today, and Gray was a teacher for 11 years,
right?
Taught US history in middle school. Yep. I learned about that.
Yep. Yep.
And so he said he's leaving, and he's married with a 2-year-old son.
Yep.
That's your nephew.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay.
Baby Bo.
Baby Bo. So I met Baby Bo today. Yep. And, and your sister, right?
I'm married to Gray's sister.
You're married to Gray's sister.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah,
okay. Yeah. So your sister-in-law. So I met your sister-in-law and your nephew. Okay. So point being, he left his teaching job full time. Right?
Right.
And he's working in the shop full time. And so is Fitz.
Right.
And Don as well.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yep.
Okay. So you and yourself, you're probably in a little bit of a different situation because you sold half your business and you still have a little bit of that.
Correct.
But those guys, that's,
full-time thing for them.
Full-time thing for them. Yep. So you're supporting.
And then Anthony is breaking us. We have four full-time people now.
So elaborate on that however much you want to.
Yeah. So I'll tell you how much I make at a great business at zero for a long period of time. So long story short is I sold a business. So I'm self-funding Graybos for now. And there may be at some point we bring on investments. We try to kind of ramp and scale. Well, I told there's a couple people that local that actually want to invest in Graybos and they kind of see the long-term future of what we're building. But I told them it's not quite investable yet because it's so new. It's so income stream and expenses are so volatile that we don't even know yet. You know, we'll probably be 6 months before we're profitable is my guess. And then we're month four. So give us another couple of months and hopefully we're breaking even. But that was the plan. You know, now anybody who's ever looked at a venture-backed business or a startup, you have a plan, but then everything changes, right? Mm-hmm. You know, you have a plan until you get hit in the face was Mike Tyson's quote. Yeah. That's 100% true. So Gray and Fitz, you know, we did a first year budget. We basically, you know, thought we'd have them two at first, knowing that Gray wouldn't come on full time until he finished school. So literally Tuesday or Monday will be his first real day. I guess today technically was his first full day. So he literally just finished school. But Fitz has been here since January. So he was here for 1 month before we launched. And then we actually hired Don 1 month before he launched as well. I've known Don for 20 years. Actually, I used to play poker for a living, and Don made a living playing poker for like 15 years.
Wow.
So he's a good mathematical mind, and he's great at buying and value. I mean, he picked up cards like that. Like, he's already great at valuing cards and figuring out what to buy, what not to buy, what we can sell it for, all that.
He's a lot like Chad Gill. He's kind of like talking to Chad in a way where he's
very intuitive.
He knows his stuff.
Yeah. Well, he's been immersed in it. We call him Vintage Don as a joke because for the first month, all he did was like value 1960s and 70s baseball cards, which he knew nothing about. So within a week, though, he was an expert on centering and why this might be a four, this might be a seven, like looking at raw cards, like he became an expert. So back to your question, though, is, so again, our model is way different. Most card shops, you have an owner who works all the time and you have a bunch of little part-time help and no benefits, no full, like all the things that come with full-time employment, like from a cost standpoint, you just don't have. What we're trying to build is a much bigger thing. And so we, you know, Gray and Fitz make a pretty decent salary and Don gets paid hourly, but he gets paid incentive on all his eBay sales. I do strongly believe in incentive comp. And in this business, you know, several different people will have incentive comp. Anthony gets an hourly rate, but he gets a percentage of drip sales. And so he's going to be the head of drip sales. So like he's literally breaking, but he's also hiring and training other breakers. He's going to be in charge of card shows and wax. So Anthony, young kid, was working at another shop locally part-time. We recognize he's just a card head and great like mind for the business. And so we recognize very quickly, this will take me 3 years to really learn everything he already knows. Literally, again, mainly what wax to buy, what wax to avoid, how much we can pay for it. Where's the best place to find it? If it's not a distributor, where can we go off secondary market to find wax? What we can move on drip today, even though we're like brand new and starting off, but then what we're building towards, like he already knows all that.
Yeah.
And so he's a great resource as well. So have I not answered part of your question? What part?
No, you've nailed it.
Okay.
Nailed it. What I was trying to get to is like, how, are you making a profit? Are you breaking even? You answered that, which is great. And then also like, how do you support full-time people? I think what you were about to say, though, is you have co-owners. So it's you, Gray, and Fitz are co-owners. So I would imagine that even though they're making a salary, them having upside in it helps you not have to run the whole thing.
Yeah. So the way we looked at it is Gray and Fitz, you know, need me to invest in the business. And I say me, my company, which is mostly me, but other partners too, but mostly me. And then they were leaving something and doing this full time. They were taking that risk. And so I felt like they needed to be not just employees, but co-owners. And they're going to, I mean, Fitz, since we opened, just grinded, and I know Gray is going to grind when he gets here. And so I feel like they needed a salary, at least what they were making before, plus some upside. And I love those guys and I want to work with them the next 10 years. Right. And then I was okay not paying myself for a long period of time from this business because just sold a business and still have other things I do. So I'm over at the real estate office. I do real estate developments. I'm over there half a day and I come over here the second half of the day. But then at night, I'm always thinking about Graybos. I'm always grinding, figuring out what to do tomorrow, you know, for Graybos.
And then is it time to talk about the future of Graybos, where you're going to be located physically before we talk about the podcast and drip a little bit?
Yeah. So we can't say publicly yet the actual property, but I will say it's in Scott's Addition in Richmond. So we viewed this first this property we're in now is really tiny. It's 550 square feet. You were in it today. You saw how small it was. It's cool, little card shop, but it's, we view it as a pop-up, like a testing ground. And so basically said, let's come here for a year. Let's learn this business. And then, but the bigger plan was already kind of in place, but we've already learned so much in the first 4 months that the new plan is actually changing slightly. But the best way to describe it is a 5,500 square foot facility. Half of it's going to be a card shop, and half of it. So the card shop will be about four times what we have upstairs. And then we have event space also, about four times what we have upstairs. And so the event space, we view it as a space where you could have kids' birthday parties, kids' birthday parties, fancy football drafts, watch parties, trading nights, mini card shows. So it's picture event space that looks like a Vegas sports book. So built out with massive TV and TVs flanking it, maybe a ticker here and there. Maybe we get one of these DraftKings, FanDuel, PointBets places to sponsor it. So their lines are flowing through the tickers and all that. And obviously we're not going to be a sports book, but we see the parallel, the overlaps in the sports business of fantasy sports betting, and sports cards.
Yep.
You and I like to look at sports cards as investing, but cards go up and down, so there's risk. And so it is in a form of gambling. Any form of investing is a form of gambling.
Totally.
And so we, with our podcast, our podcast is just starting. It's not big yet, but we want to make the people that are already doing sports betting stuff and fantasy sports stuff and like sports nuts like me and Gray and Fitz, we want to kind of show them, hey, there's another way to do this too. And you can, if you have this intuition, if you think the Bills are going to win the Super Bowl next year, how can you attack that as a sports bettor? You can do a future and you can bet on the Bills to win the Super Bowl. You might bet on Bills week one, week two, week three to win their game. You might draft some of the Bills players because you think Josh Allen's going to have a good year or Steph Diggs is going to have a good year, but you can also buy Josh Allen's card. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Yeah. And if your intuition is so strong and your gut so strong, to me, that's the most purest form is like betting on that player.
Yeah.
And you're betting on their situation too, the team too. But to me, that's what got me so hooked. It's like, wait, I can bet on this guy. You know what I mean? And I can hold something in my hand. To me, that's part of it too. I never vault cards. I don't buy NFTs. I want to hold it in my hand. I want to see it. And so sports cards has got me hooked for that reason.
Yeah. So Graybo's Giblets is the name of the podcast.
Graybo's Giblets.
What's a giblet?
All right. So the name that came to be is we listen to a lot of podcasts. I listen to yours and a lot of long form, hour long podcasts. And I listen to a lot of them, right? I listen to sports cards. I listen to daily fantasy podcasts. I listen to sports betting podcasts, and it's so much. And I probably do listen literally 15 hours a week of that, driving, at the gym, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And we felt that everybody, all of our friends want all of that knowledge that are in my Gray and Fitz's head, but not everybody has the time or the desire to listen to 20 hours a week. So we thought, what if we do that? We listen to 20 hours a week of stuff, and we boil it down into these little nuggets of 15-minute nuggets of information, and you're getting all the benefit of knowing the Vegas sharps, the Lefty McKee sharps, right? All these guys, right? But I can give it to you in 15 minutes. Just this is what we're doing this week. This is our plays this week in the sports fantasy betting and card world.
Nice.
And so we were looking for something alliterative, so like Graybo's something, and we couldn't quite get the G letter, not the G sound. Everybody thinks it's Graybo's Giblets.
Giblets, yeah.
Yeah, so a giblet is a nugget of information. It's not, no one else says it. We just say it. So now we've kind of coined it to like a catchphrase. Like we just yell giblets, like for fun. When we hit a big card in a break, we say it to each other. We're getting off the phone. Like instead of bye, say giblet. It's just dumb. It's real dumb. But we thought it'd be catchy.
That's the best. I love it. Okay, perfect. I'm going to have to start thinking of some giblets that I'll email you or text you. Okay.
Nice little giblet there.
Giblet. And then maybe I'll send you an audio message. You can play it on the podcast. Giblets.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. That's awesome. So, I'm curious about, I wanted to have you sort of narrate through what the current, setup is with the shop and then the kind of the apartment behind the shop where you break and you have all of your shipping station and then you get the podcast studio downstairs, but this is going to not be your headquarters much longer. So I wonder if we'll save that for another episode when you're in your new headquarters. But
yeah, well, one thing I didn't mention about the new place. So what Paul is talking about, for those listening, we have the card shop right behind. It's an apartment that we've rented that has storage, shipping, breaking station, and podcast booth that we're in now. And eventually all this will be in the new space. But the other part I forgot to mention about the new space is that the podcast booth and the breaking booth will be like a part of the shop. And like, you'll be able to see it each other. Like you might walk into the shop and, oh, you know, the VCU basketball coach is getting interviewed in the podcast, or you might say, oh, there's a break going on right there. And the break is happening and you could be on drip or whatnot watching it, but you could also, it'll be cast to the TVs on both sides. So like, it's just interactive, like some, a truly like retail experience, immersive, you know, experiential retail experience. And there'll be a food and beverage component as well. So mom and dad could drop the kids off. The kids are shopping for an hour. They might have a beer or a Prosecco, a pizza or an appetizer, and they can watch a break going on in addition to a sporting event going on. So like a true, if you're a true sports junkie and if you like sports gambling and fantasy sports, it'll be like your favorite place in the world.
Yeah. And most of the parents are going to be like, holy crap, I had no idea that this was the card shop experience of 2025 or whatever.
Yeah.
So that's really cool. All right. So I think we could probably close out with the whole breaking discussion, because I am fascinated with, really, I'll just be honest, like why people break.
Right.
Like I think, so I totally agree with you on the overlap of fantasy sports, sports betting, and cards.
Right.
That was probably the main reason I got into cards a few years ago, because I was big into fantasy sports forever. I was obsessed. There was a good 5-year period of my time where the only thing I ever talked about was fantasy football, and my wife would have to like shake it out of me and be like, shut up, we don't care about your dynasty team, like you're with your family, you need to think about something else.
On my fantasy team, that guy, you know, that guy.
I mean, it was really bad for a while. And so, but that's really why when I saw what you saw like a few years ago, I was like, okay, like this cards is it for me, for sure. It's just a better version of it. So I understand like breaking, I guess I understand like why somebody would break, why somebody would buy into a break, because there's the card and the gambling experience of it. You could do in theory an unlimited amount of it and independently of like how much money you have, you could, you could do it at scale versus like continuously going to the store and like ripping open wax, which is much harder to do.
Right.
But like, why would a card shop break? Like why does a breaker break? Why does a card shop break? Why does a card shop want to be a breaker is probably a question for you.
It's a good question. And I don't think everyone should do it. And we may do this for a year or two and realize, hey man, we're not making as much money. We're losing money. Like there's always the risk. So I think the reason the customer breaks is because one is instant gratification. Like, so you could be sitting on your couch and you're bored, and you want to either watch TV, you want to scroll TikTok, or you want to jump into a break, right? So there's that. There's a gambling component. It's fun. You might hit something big. There are some people that try to do strategic breaking, like they only buy Minnesota Twins and this year Bowman Chrome because they're chasing Brooks Lee. You know, there's that component. I think it should be abundantly clear to your listeners that it's not a good way to make money. Hobby, right? Yeah. That's not, like, I would do it for fun, for entertainment. But I wouldn't do it as like my primary source of making money ever. Right. And then why would a card shop do it? I would say some people shouldn't, you know what I mean? Like, cause it's risk. You might lose money. There's the theft. There's all that stuff could happen. It's more work. A couple of reasons we want to do it. The main one is kind of what I said earlier, is if I buy wax and sell it in the shop, I'll sell this much. But I could sell 4 or 5 times that on drip, and that raises my importance with distributors. So then I end up getting the better wax.
Yeah.
And so that's certainly part of it. We also do it because it's fun and we enjoy, or I personally do breaks 1 night a week. You know, we hire breakers to do it 5 nights. I just do it 1 because I enjoy doing it. It's fun. Some of my friends will get on, neighbors, relatives, like they'll jump on and we're interacting, and I think it's a ton of fun. And we are trying to build this kind of like fully immersive kind of lifestyle sports card business, which to me is physical store, the event space, the breaking station, the podcast booth, Instagram, taking customers to sporting events and sitting on the front row, like kind of the Graybo's lifestyle is this kind of thing we're trying to build. And to me, breaking just has to be part of it. So there's differing viewpoints on breaking. Like somebody like Rob from Burbank, who I listen to a lot, you know, thinks it was a fad, thinks it was not good for the hobby because it's more about gambling than investing, and that it was kind of juiced by the economy, the COVID years economy, and everybody having funny money and crypto money. And then I do think that's kind of true. Mm-hmm. And then on the flip side, you have Fanatics, who Michael Rubin thinks breaking is the kind of gateway to the hobby for a new person to find it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think both things are kind of true. So we'll watch it and we'll see. And it's possible a year from now, we're like, hey, we tried breaking. We're not going to do it. Or we might say, you know what? Breaking is a big, huge part of our business.
Yeah. Interesting. It'll be interesting to see like if that is a profitable avenue for you or if it's something that you keep for fun. Because that's the other thing. Like, a lot of this is for me, sometimes I forget like how I run my business. Like there is a good amount of like, I do this because it's fun.
right.
So, yeah. So I like your answer there. It's like, I like doing it. So that's why we do it. That's perfect. Like sometimes that's all it is. So we're going to do a show on Monday, how to find a good break. And you can check that out on the channel.
I'm looking forward to that.
I'm looking forward to that as well, because to your point, like it's something that I've kept out of my content because I don't believe that you can really ever make money breaking. And I believe it's like a super huge money pit, but.
Well, here, you mean to tell you the only time you can make money breaking is when a new breaker like us is new to drip or new to whatnot, and they don't have a following yet. And you go on there and you don't have enough people in your room. And like, we're just giving away $20 break spots for $8. I do think you can make money at that. So like you saw those two guys today hit those big.
Yeah.
We as a shop took a bath on that break. Sold a $550 box for like maybe $350, but we're kind of doing that at times because we're starting off and we want to advertise that our customers got this great deal. So those two guys maybe bought in for $8 and got a $1,000 plus card.
Yeah. So hey, we need to mention that on our show, but check out the show on how to pick a good break. But you made me think of something else that I'd rather talk to you about. So, Gypsy Queen, you had a box of Gypsy Queen.
Yeah.
Topps Baseball, was it 2022 or 2023? Gypsy Queen.
Yep, 22. Yep.
2022 Gypsy Queen sitting in the shop since the opening of the shop. So literally 5 months it had been sitting there.
Yep.
Today somebody bought it and pulled a Shohei Ohtani auto serial numbered to something.
Yep.
I don't know. I took a pic. I'll throw a picture of it. Yeah. You'll see the picture of it when I post production. You'll see the picture now.
Yeah.
Anyway,
$540 card.
$540 card. The box was like $125 or something like that.
Yeah.
Question is, as a business owner, are you thinking of it like, because I hear you saying we need to buy wax so that we can move through wax and show whoever the either the distributor or the manufacturer is that we're legit and we can move through this wax.
Mm-hmm.
But then I think of it like, as a business owner, do you say if this wax has sat here for X amount of time, do we then move it into a break? Because at that point, it's almost free inventory. I mean, it's not free inventory. You paid for it.
It's the sunk cost, right?
Yeah. So, because then, or do you think, do we, like, how do you move? Because today somebody bought it. So that answers that question. But do you ever think of it like, it's going to sit here for X amount of time. If it's going to sit, because like a Walmart or a Walgreens, like they would move it off the shelf and put something else on the shelf because it's valuable real estate or whatever.
Right.
And then they would probably sell it for 25% of what what they paid for it to another store. And it would end up in like a Dollar General or something. Mm-hmm. But like, so would your equivalent of that ever be, we're going to rip this ourselves and see if we get the Ohtani or we're going to rip this ourselves, or would you put it into a break or would you keep it on the shelf or how do you think about that?
So when we started, we made tons of mistakes on the wax side, not big ones, you know, small mistakes that we learned from, but in a perfect world, like when Bowman U Inception came out, in a perfect world, we, as a card shop, we'd figure out what wax should we buy? How much should we buy? How much can we sell within, let's say, 2 to 3 weeks? And let's buy exactly that much. So we buy, like Bowman U Inception, we bought 2 cases. We sold it all within the first 7 days. And we didn't really have much demand for it after that. Prices dropped a little bit when they found out Wimby was a redemption. And then the next new thing's coming out. So that was perfect, right? We didn't do that at first. We didn't do a lot of things perfect. we bought the wrong wax. We paid too much for it. And we bought it. And because we paid too much for it, we had it priced a little higher and it sat there. So in any business where you have inventory, I think most people will tell you inventory is expensive and it's your money just sitting on the shelf. And so it would be better to move it at a lesser number than to let it sit there. At the same time, you also want this wax selection when people walk in, even if they don't buy it, customers think in their head, ooh, instead of having 12 options, I had 80 options and they always have what I want.
Yeah.
And so there's a give and a take. So in a perfect world, I think maybe something like Bowman U Inception is so timely. Like, no one's going to be asking for that in 3-4 months.
True.
Right. But people might be asking for 2023 Bowman baseball 3 or 4 months after it comes out.
Or,
right?
Or like 5 years after.
Exactly.
Like,
yeah, yeah.
That
yeah.
kind of product can be. Yeah. That's a good point. So there could actually be a cost to taking it off the shelf in this industry.
Right.
Depending on the product. Right.
So, yeah, I think, you know, so not just in time inventory where you get it today and sell it tomorrow, but the idea is if I buy it, I'm going to sell it in 3 weeks. And then if I sell it all, do I ever want it back on the shelf again? And if so, just have a little bit of it. And so we don't have perfect systems built out, but I think we're slowly learning. And then you see wax prices move all the time, which is something you may not think of as a first-time card shop owner. Prism basketball, from when we bought it to now, has probably dropped $150 per box, hobby. And then Prism football is going up, right? Because people like Pickett and Purdy more now, and then Ritter more now than they did a year ago.
Yeah. That's because Fitz has influenced the market.
It's mostly Fitz.
Single-handedly. Yeah. Giblets.
The Ryan Fitz effect.
Yep. All right, man. Well, this is cool. I wanted to give the audience like an overview of what it was like to run a card shop, what some of the fun stuff is, what some of the challenges are, how it's you kind of have to look at it holistically the way Duke's looking at it, with breaking things down into like, yes, we need to have a business plan. We need to know when we're going to break even, when we're going to make profit, how we're going to pay people. Like, there has to be that side, but there also has to be like the perspective of, we're doing this for fun. This is a hobby. But you also, a lot of other times, have to figure out, are you going to pay yourself as the business owner? When are you going to pay yourself? You have to figure that part out. And then just the amount of work that needs to go into it. But to me, the card shop business, after having created content for the last few years, seems to be the most complicated business that you could possibly run in the hobby, because it's almost like, to your point a minute ago, you have to have that selection. Mm-hmm. It's almost like you can't go too narrow, because if you can go too narrow on an eBay store, you can go narrow as like a vendor at a card show, like any other area of the hobby. I feel like you could be super hyper focused on an area and really maximize your profits. But it's almost like the nature of a hobby shop almost has to be, it's counterintuitive to trying to be that efficient. Like, you can get there,
right?
Especially with the kind of experience you're trying to build in phase two with the new space,
right?
Because that's going to open up more revenue streams.
Correct. Food and beverage will help a lot. For example,
is that going to fund the hobby part of it, do you think? Or is that going to be, or do you think the hobby part will be profitable on its own?
Yeah. Yeah. I do think like you could buy and sell singles as a hobby shop and make a living. You could buy and sell wax and make a profit. But if we can make higher margins on food and beverage and event space rental, and maybe if our podcast ever gets big, we can have sponsorships there and, you know, these other kind of income streams, then ultimately those things might make 80% of the margin. The hobby shop would make a little bit, but yeah, I think you would try attack each of those kind of line items and say, how do we make this part as profitable as possible? How do we make this part as profitable as possible?
Yeah. All right. Well, everybody out there in the audience, you guys are all great. And, I think, you know, Grabos has been an amazing partner for us. And I just sort of thought of this, like, we're always sort of talking about go to Grabos.co, use the promo code strategy 2023. In this episode, I think all of you probably, if you're watching or listening to this episode, you probably actually are a business person in some sort of a B2B situation, maybe in the hobby, maybe in some of these other areas that Duke is in with this new phase two project that he's working on. And he's an entrepreneur that's like very open to like talking about partnerships. I would say the call to action in this episode would be like, email me about, you know, paul@nooffseason.com about like wanting to potentially partner with Duke in what he's building at Grabos. And if you see mutually beneficial opportunities between what you're doing out there and what he's doing, email me, I'll hook you guys up, and then you guys can talk shop and see how you can help each other out, because he's in it for the long term. And I'll tell you what, like, if you do just want to come shop cards at Grabos, whether at the retail location in Richmond, Virginia, or online, or in one of the breaks, definitely do that, because I've been to a bunch of other LCSs around the country and around the world, and I'm telling you, like, nobody cares about the customer experience more than these guys. Like, that is 100% true. Like, I would challenge you to find another. Now, I know there's like the Burbanks and the bigger, fancier ones out there, but like, the level of care and what they've put into their retail location and their brand. You might find people who care equally, but you're not going to find people who care more than these guys. So,
well, if that's the one thing you take away from this, that means a lot to me, because that is the thing that we are trying to be different on, is truly understanding the customer experience. And you've probably seen us do the little things, the thank you notes and the tissue paper branded.
The tissue paper's cool.
Those things will happen by accident, right? Like, yeah. Those things cost money and take time, but we want, like, whenever you buy something from us and you open that box, we want it to be a cool experience. And
yeah.
I'd say if you're a retailer or any kind of business owner, read the book, Delivering Happiness, and it's by Tony Hsieh, who started Zappos. Have you ever heard of that company? Who sold shoes?
Yeah.
And he, like, that's basically, we're just copying his model on the opening the package thing. Like, that's, but you know, we take a lot of little tidbits away from all these car shop owners that do content, Robin Burbank and Card Vault and what's the one? Oh my gosh, the Love of the Game. And then there's all these shops we see across the country, and I don't know most of these folks, but they have put this content. We take little ideas from each of them. And also, I did meet Rob at Mint Collective, and I told him that, like, hey man, we love your content. You know, a lot of your stuff you do, we do. We appreciate you putting it out. And so the hobby is really cool because of the cooperation and the community and helping each other and seeing all of each other as friends that we all help each other as opposed to just straight, you know, competitors. I think the hobby is unique in that way.
Yeah, I agree. We're going to be at the National. Graybo's is going to be at the National. We're going to do a meetup with the audience, so we'd love to see you there.
Sidecar Borusky's going to be there, I'm sure.
Yeah, let's come meet Ryan Borusky, Duke Dodson, Ryan Fitz, Gray Burnett, myself, Lefty, Dr. Crack Chad, the whole crew.
I can't wait to give Dr. Chad a big bear hug.
I know. I hope Shoes is there, because then I want a picture with all of us with Shoes, Chad, and Borusky.
That'd be amazing. Yeah.
Met Evan Bell today at the shop.
We did. Shout out to Evan. Got a new hat.
So we're building the Graybos and nooffseason.com family together. Hopefully we'll see you guys soon, whether it's at the National or somewhere else or at Graybos in Richmond. I'm Paul Hickey with nooffseason.com. Anything you want to add, Duke?
Giblets.
We're out. See you guys.
See you.